Good morning, and welcome at the analyst meeting and call of Volker Wessels. Jan De Ruyter, Chairman, Jan Van Rooyen, CFO, and Alfred Vos, COO, are present at the other side of the line. I hand the line over to Mr. De Ruyter. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everybody, and to a bit of an unusual Q3 update call. We're gonna discuss two things, I guess. First, the numbers, and then the offer that we simultaneously announced this morning. The highlights of the numbers, in our opinion, EBITDA, including OPA, for the first 9 months, came in at 148 million, and that's 18 million up over the comparable period last year. Order book at the end of September, slightly over 9 billion, which is an increase of 167 million as compared to the same period last year. We made a very specific statement on OPA, which is that the project is now approximately 76% complete. I think we have roughly 200 million to go in construction. We increased the loss provision by 1 million to 115 million, which is the Volker Wessels share of the loss. We have also indicated that we expect that we call that the managerial target, that the final project result will be in the range of -110 million. That would imply an improvement of 5 million and 77.5 million negative, and that would imply an improvement of 37.5 million. The reason that we made that specific announcement on OPA, obviously, is linked to the offer from Reggeborgh. That brings me to the second topic. We also announced together with Reggeborgh, that Reggeborgh is making an offer for the shares in Volker Wessels that they don't own as yet, at 22.20 euros per share. That is a premium of 25.4% over the closing price of October 28. A few words on the process that we followed. The letter from Reggeborgh was received on October 8, addressed to myself and to Jan Hommen and the members of the managing board and the members of the supervisory board. We have formed a special committee, which consisted of the independent members of the supervisory board, i.e., Jan Hommen, Sietse Hepkema, and Frank Verhoeven. And from the company, Jan Van Rooyen, and Thomas Lampe, the company secretary, and myself. And the purpose of the exercise, obviously, was to safeguard a very solid process in order to balance the interest of all stakeholders, and that has resulted yesterday in the signing of a merger protocol, where we, as a managing board, as well as the independent members of the supervisory board, unanimously recommend the offer to our shareholders. And with those opening statements, I would like to give the floor to open the floor for questions. I suggest that we start in the room and that we, as we normally do, change to the phone whenever we feel that that is a better balance of the questioning. We, Marc, yeah.
Yes, good morning, Martijn den Drijver, ABN AMRO. On the numbers first, if you look at construction and real estate development, you mentioned the impact of nitrogen, only mentioning that raising the low nitrogen emission norm could have an impact, a positive impact. Don't you think the other measures that the government is currently contemplating could be effective as well? Raising lowering motorway speeds, regional balancing, extend Salbeeren. Are those not effective measures in your opinion?
I think that basically what we say is that if the norm for nitrogen deposition is increased, then it is more beneficial to construction and real estate development than it is to infra. And that has very much to do with to what level you increase the norm. The expectation was that the norm would be increased from spot 0.5 to 1.0. And I think that the latest is that that is not gonna happen, or that increase, if it happens, will be lower. Basically, the message is that construction and real estate is helped by a smaller increase than infra. But I think that it is very difficult to say how this will pan out. We believe that if you separate the new permits from what they call the deposition which has already taken place, the achterhofwaarde, that is now connected. So they basically take the view, if you are close to the Nature 2000 area, then any additional impact is significant and hence should be compensated, or you are not allowed to do anything. We believe that a better way forward is to do two things. Okay, new permits will be allowed if and when they are under a certain new higher norm. And secondly, the government should increase its measures on basically attacking the problem that already happened over the past so many years. So separation. And I think that it is highly uncertain how that will be panning out so far. But Alfred is the specialist here. We don't have a lot of confidence that this will be resolved immediately.
And if that is the case, what does that imply for 2020 then?
Well, as long as there's no solution, whatever the solution might be, we're not in control here. It's really the government that needs to come with a solution. We have provided the government with solutions that are also applicable and also enforceable within EU, also within Dutch law and legislation. If the government takes those over, I think that the impact will be there for 2020 and also the years beyond. But the damage will be, considering the circumstances, minimal, because we do have disruption right now already. That's a disruption that we see it in our order book development and infra, and that also counts for the whole, for the overall construction market in the Netherlands. I mean, it's a fact because there are no permits right now in certain areas, and the pipeline coming from the government in terms of infra projects is slowing down or is actually coming to a standstill. So that effect will be noticeable over the next coming years. If there is no solution, or if there is going to be a hybrid solution that will make things even more complex, I think we will enter into some difficult times, because the solution is not that difficult, how strange that might sound, but politically it is a very complex situation. And if that is not resolved, and basically, the pipeline with infra projects is right now freezed. There's not much coming to the market. And of course, the government is, doing their best with the PR machine, talking about infra projects being submitted to the market in different niches and different areas. But that doesn't help our capacity reserves that we have as an industry, not only as the large construction companies, but also our supply chain that holds the equipment, that holds people, that is not necessary to renovate bridges or to build dikes or to renovate the flood defense systems in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. We don't need cranes. We don't need asphalt machines for that. So it will cause a serious disruption in the market if there is no solution achieved in very short notice.
If I may follow up on that, Heijman has given some sort of indication. They said around 10% if not on total revenue, so not disclosing what that is for real estate or construction or infra. Would you be willing to give such a range as well, or an approximate percentage, just to give us a sense of what a significant impact may actually mean?
We can only point out the current development of our order book in infra. I think that shows already some reduction, and that was not the expectation. And it's very difficult to say more at this stage because we simply do not know what's going to happen next. It's very dangerous. Whatever we say now might be a mismatch and might be too negative.
Yeah.
And you're also used from us that we tell you what we know. And that if we're really firm about something, we will tell you. But we could also be dangerous here. Or we could get into the danger zone to be either too negative or too positive. So I think that looking at all the book development already gives you an indication if you just calculate the reduction and the more time it will take to come to a solution, the percentage you can almost extrapolate over a period of months going forward.
But there's going to be an impact on your cost coverage. So your fixed cost coverage in the capacity organization is always bigger than the loss of revenue. And I think that the problem here is that we believe that there are solutions, but it seems for now, I have to be careful, that there is a total lack of political will to implement those solutions. And that makes it very difficult to predict, because if that political will overnight is there, then it's basically a couple of signatures. And that makes it difficult. But the impact, I have to say, use the metaphor, it's like you have a bubble in the pipeline. The bubble, already we saw it already happening with our half-year results. So basically fewer tenders in billable hours, people basically inside who have less work to do, that will slowly but steadily be seen outside as well, because the whole thing moves out. Now, the quicker they resolve, the better the solution, but part of the accident has already happened because we have this bubble of air which needs to go out. So there is today, later today, there is again a session in The Hague, and I think we are trying to influence the debate on all levels as constructively as possible. But political will is political will, and that we cannot influence.
Yeah.
And there are parties who believe that this is potentially the best thing that ever happened to us in this country, because we can reduce cattle, we can reduce this, that, God knows what. And that goes, I guess, at a cost. Yeah, that's a given.
Okay. It's
interesting to see that that we are the only country in the EU that is having this problem. So it's completely self-inflicted.
Okay. There may be a question on the UK, very strong. Market share gains, I assume. Is that due to weakness of your competitors, your strong solvency? Can you elaborate a little bit on what's on that strong performance?
Okay.
The UK performance is primarily driven by a continuous focus on margin over volume. The UK provides, the market provides good opportunity for projects that we like, in the range of risk and reward categories that we pitch on, and that continues, that pipeline continues to be strong. And we don't deviate from that. I can't tell you anything about, you know, the market circumstances about, you know, regarding our competitors. I can only tell you that this is the result of a continuous focus on margin over volume, solid contract management, solid execution teams.
Yeah.
It's actually not more complex than that.
The growth in the third quarter was phenomenal, plus 30%.
And also, if you look at the outlook, you may recall that we've mentioned a few times the comprehensive spending review that the UK government is going through, and they have come up with a long-term infrastructure budget. For what we see right now, continues to grow into the market as order book potential for us, and we're able to pick up good projects out of that pool of projects.
Okay.
This is frameworks or two-stage tenders, where we can actually work with the client to reach the price agreement in a healthy environment that generates, you know, a good balance between cash return and risk.
I think the bankruptcy of Carillion, to some extent, rationalized the behavior of some client, right?
in the midterm year. I think we're probably benefiting somewhat from that. You did see some disruption right after the bankruptcy, but at the other end, we also have been faced with some higher costs in terms of
project bank
insurances, but project bank accounts, banking fees, etc., because the Carillion bankruptcy also caused some issues in the profit and loss of some other secondary players in the construction market that are trying to earn their fees back on future business. So in that sense, the cost is going up somewhat. But Jan is right. I think some customers come to sense that always buying for the cheapest is not the best procurement strategy.
So it does come down to solvency, reliability.
And quality of execution. Lower failure cost. Spending a lot of time and money in digitalization and trying to optimize our workflows, and that pays off.
Very high employee satisfaction in the UK. Yeah, I think it's overall.
And a final question from my side, just trying to learn as much as possible from you. The discussions with Rijkswaterstaat on the new contract forms, how's that evolving? How has that been evolving since the summer?
That's continuing. We should have been by now. So but basically what happened is that McKinsey report end of last year, that is being translated into a Rijkswaterstaat report, which was published at the end of May. At the end of May, the minister sent a letter to Parliament indicating that she would come with new measures before Christmas this year. Rijkswaterstaat wanted to have pilot projects into the market, trying to get experience with new contract form. Not necessarily only alliance contracts, but also longer-term maintenance contracts, which would allow the contractor to have basically a larger scope for innovation. So if you have a longer period of time, you can obviously innovate more. I think the whole nitrogen and PFAS debate basically derailed that to a certain extent. So the intention of Rijkswaterstaat is absolutely still there to start doing that. But right now, their focus is, as you can expect, 150% on these particular issues, because their pipeline of bringing projects to the market basically is grinding to a halt.
I appreciate that, but looking at the Rijkswaterstaat, I think you've mentioned once that the top of the Rijkswaterstaat is willing to make those changes, but that then maybe the lower below that, the lowers below that, 8,000 people plus. Will you say anything about that, or is that way too early?
Yeah, listen, I think in general, it's specific to Rijkswaterstaat, I think that the same applies to us and it would apply to any other organization, is that if you want to change the culture, it never happens overnight, and it starts with a few believers. And those believers have to basically try to make the whole system move. I am still 100% convinced that Rijkswaterstaat is looking for a different way to interact with the infra market, because I said it many times before, nobody is helped by a whole range of problem projects. We have one, they have, I don't know how many. So now we think that one is already enough, so I'll take the view that they have the same opinion. The thing right now is that the piloting is a very good idea. They had three projects newly built, and they had three projects which would be in long-term maintenance. They had basically earmarked for setting into the market under new contract forms and whatever have you. And that is temporarily, I hope, derailed by nitrogen and PFAS. The willingness to do so, in my opinion, is unchanged, and the discussions that we do have from time to time with Rijkswaterstaat are continuing. I think that the next one is the end of this month, somewhere around. So that is continuing. So the willingness is definitely there, but everybody is temporarily, I hope, diverted, I think it's the right word, by this whole self-inflicted Dutch problem.
So let's say a solution from PFAS in before year end. What's your best guess of when new type of contracts could be acceptable for the next month? That's so the whole infra market
can breathe again.
Yeah, but the problem is far greater than that, because then you end up in the nitrogen. And nitrogen has two elements. One is the realization phase, where you need permits. The other element is the exploitation of the usage phase of a project. Both elements need to roll up into what they call an environmental permit that you didn't need in that form before May of last. Actually, you needed that since 2011, but it was ignored, and that's actually where the whole thing started. So the government underestimated that issue. And in the realization phase, we can still pull some projects forward. But at the end of the day, we're just on the receiving end here. You need a client, and this is a monopoly client. This is 90% of the Dutch infrastructure market is the Dutch government in its various forms. And that client needs to be comfortable that her projects are being permitted on all the phases before they start spending money on tender processes or spending money to have the contractors calculate on a price and a concept for the projects. So there are various elements that need to have a tick in the box. And the issue here is that the usage phase is blocking the tick in the box as long as these levels are where they are. Because the nitrogen deposition in the N2000 areas in the Netherlands is always exceeding this level during the usage phase, even though we might come with NOx filters and all kinds of other stuff that will allow us to be, let's say, NOx acceptable during the realization phase. That doesn't help the project, because the project also needs to generate levels of NOx or nitrogen that do not exceed the new boundaries, the new levels, enable to get those projects permitted. So it's a very complex problem. And as again, Sian said earlier, we have provided the government and also various stakeholders with a solution that falls within those guidelines, because we're very active on the background. But you need to have two to tango to get this over the bridge.
Morning, Thijs Holster, ING. Follow up on ABN's question. You have been around as a construction company, being market leader in most segments. I'm looking at the industry for about 20 years. And while I also get the question a lot, what will be the impact? People tend to focus on, we're going to lose 10% of revenue or 50% of revenue. So people are in the media, probably investors tend to focus on the companies who lose the most revenue next year. But it is, in my view, also the case that the high quality companies say, I'm not diving in price and mispricing risks. I've seen many times that the companies which are more financially distressed are more aggressively tendering for the few projects still out there.
Yep.
And then they appear in the initial phase to be the winners, but we all know how it's going to end up 2 years from now. Is that what you typically see, and you're already preparing your tender people, guys, watch out, don't lower your risk. Your price or whatever, how you price it is, so better be underutilized, because you can calculate that loss, but you cannot calculate the loss you're going to make on this price project.
It's a top three priority.
And it,
we're all over it.
But you also expect this to happen again.
Because there's overcapacity. And then if there are less projects, then there was already overcapacity before this issue started.
Yeah,
so with this issue, there's even more overcapacity.
Yeah, and I think we saw it happening. So that's why we made this statement in the Q2 numbers.
It's already starting, probably.
Yeah.
But to make it factual, there's overcapacity in the infra market.
Yeah.
Because construction is not construction.
And it's not only the loss of the project margin or result. It's also because we have negative working capital in projects, also the loss of the funding by our clients. So I can imagine, and also for us it's difficult to sort of decide on the tender strategy and be consistent.
So in a kind of a worst case scenario, that there's no decision, or maybe let's say mid next year, probably there will be bankruptcies. for you as a long-term strategy, would you then look for consolidation? Because everybody with an economical view looks at the Dutch market way too fragmented, way too much competition. So the market is never really healthy. So it needs consolidation. But
it's far too early to speculate on this. I think we should give the politicians some room to come with a solution. I think that they communicated the date of the 1st of December. And
it's not there yet.
And
I think that it's...
We are not positive, but I think it's early.
Let the process run its course.
To speculate.
Yeah. And what we need to do, Thijs, is just run the business like we always do. So focus on margin over volume. So not volume, but margin. Acceptable risk, and if the projects are not there, then we have to size the business to the level where it needs to be, and we will size it again and again to make sure that we are, I wouldn't say ahead of the curve, but that we have, you know, the timing right on the decisions we need to make. And at the same time, don't underestimate the investments we have to do to make sure that we also prepare ourselves for the developments that we see in the market that will require that are required to make sure that whatever solution there will be, we believe that the end conclusion will always be we need to come up with a more sustainable way how we build our projects. By the way, this is not new. This is something that's been on our agenda even before the IPO, but we might have to push the throttle here and there a little bit more than we do today.
Operator, can we take a question from the other side on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, for questions, you may press star 1 on your telephone. So that's star 1 for your questions. Go ahead, please. Star 1 for your questions. Go ahead, please. And we have a question from Mr. Christophe Begin. Kempen, go ahead, please, sir.
Hello everyone. I have a question on the statement you make on open air. Can you elaborate a bit more where you numbers are based on the potential recovery amount of the loss provision?
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, this is the statement that we make on open air. So what we do is we, for every single project that we have, we make an estimation of what we call the managerial outcome, maybe. And the only reason that we disclosed OpenAI at this stage is that OpenAI obviously has figured rather prominently during our recent listed history. And in order to inform everybody on the same page, we have given you these two numbers, this range. And we are not going to be more specific on that for especially commercial reasons.
Okay, and maybe one last question, if I may. The statement is in name of the consortium you make, or only in name of Volker Wessels?
Only in the name of Volker Wessels, but I have obviously informed my colleague of BAM that we would be doing so, but BAM has to make their own assessment. And they necessarily agree with it. I don't know.
Okay, clear. Thanks.
Okay. André?
Once again on the nitrogen emissions. Can you talk us through a bit more in detail about what your recommendations have been to government?
I'm thinking because I can say it's, I think that the first thing I said at the beginning is that we try to disconnect, rephrase. The current way on how a permit is being given is that the total picture is taken into account. So if you are working in a area which is a Nature 2000 area, which is already badly affected, then the logical outcome in the current decision making is because of the existing situation, and you cannot do anything any longer going forward. the proposal that we make, and that is, in our opinion, how the EU directive should be implemented in the first place, is that you disconnect the two, that you look at the nitrogen deposition that is caused by a particular project, then you have to verify whether that has a significant negative impact on the existing situation. Whatever the level of significant negative is, you can determine as a country yourself. There are no guidelines from Europe on that. In the Netherlands, that level is set very close to zero, and that's where you go wrong. So that level should be increased. The other way is say, okay, if we have affected areas, then we should have separate policies aimed at reducing the nitrogen deposition already there in those areas. As long as you continue to connect, you end up in the situation where you are today. If you disconnect, and also the Raad van State is not against that, if you disconnect, then you can actively figure out policies to reduce nitrogen deposition, reducing cattle, whatever, so the bomb maatregelen, whilst you continue with your normal economic activity. Now that needs to separate. The second one is your PFAS. There was a report last week that the way that it is being calculated or analyzed how much PFAS is actually in soil is rather, how do you say that, it's not very precise. So the model which is being used to assess the level of PFAS apparently is very questionable, and that the outcomes are basically very, very uncertain. So basically, we believe that if you raise the norm for PFAS, then in real life not a lot will change, but on climate or on diversity, biological diversity reasons, but you can continue your activities. So it almost seems that we have locked ourselves up in a model which is giving the wrong outcomes, and we all take that as biblical going forward.
What's the possibility to lift a norm? Because you can lift it a big way and still be far more conservative than any other European country.
Correct. And the thing is, what you now see is, because nitrogen is singled out as a problem, and if you have a project, for instance, if you reroute your logistics towards a certain project, which is causing you to drive 50 kilometers more in order to stay away from a particular Nature 2000 area, then that project can fly, that you are causing much more carbon dioxide. That's a given, but that's okay. Yeah. So I think that as long as you look at the problem in complete isolation, you get very strange outcomes. It is mind-boggling, in my opinion, that you are going to stop a residential project where the new-built homes are energy neutral and whatever have you, yeah? Because of a tiny fraction of nitrogen, which is adding maybe to a problem which is already substantially big anyway. So in order to solve that particular problem, I think that if you take the Hoge Veluwe, has far too much nitrogen already. So if you look at on these maps, it's all yellow. I'm not saying that adding more is not helpful, but the real measure is how can we find something which is actually going to decrease what's already there. Yeah. So I think we are basically, we are painting ourselves in the corner of the room, and the paint never dries. Yeah, that's problematic. But it's self-inflicted. And whatever you define as significant is up to Dutch politics. So this is political will. And the problem seems to be, that time will tell, that certain political parties are using this in order to reach other goals which have nothing to do with the construction sector. Construction is responsible for spot 6%, rounded up to 1%. So whatever we do is insignificant anyway. But it's the most curious debate that I've seen in this country.
Ever.
Yeah. You can quote me on that. And that's why we were also rather vocal in August, because the PAS was agreed in 2012 or 2014, whatever it was, the color of Parliament was less green than it is today. And clearly, at least we took the view that it would be far more difficult now with the composition of this Parliament to get alternatives passed in Parliament. And that's exactly what's happening, because the coalition is under incredible pressure not to implode on the back of nitrogen. So everybody gets sort of semi measures. So this is a real problem.
If you look at the results, just down to the numbers there, we're seeing infra moved up strongly in the first half, moved down strongly in Q3. Is that just partly anomalies or anything special there?
Yes.
For Jan to answer.
Yeah, I think part of it is the seasonal pattern that we have. Infra is a lot of smaller projects, but also, of course, a few larger projects. On balance, we did a little bit less in the third quarter than in the second quarter, but nothing really special.
Any other changes in the UK? You warned about Brexit, but I couldn't imagine why you would make that statement, because for all the companies, you will probably be least affected by this. Have you seen anything there? Because the numbers appear quite stronger since my time.
Yeah, I think it appears stronger. What you say is Brexit. We said Brexit remains an uncertainty. So we haven't said Brexit is increased risk. We say it remains an uncertainty, which is still the case. Obviously, we are moving towards a solution. I think that the biggest uncertainty in my book would be that the election result on December 12th is a hung parliament, then could be an outcome, and that would not be helpful. I think that if the polls are right and there will be a Tory victory, which will give them the majority of parliament, then I think they will swiftly move with the Brexit. And then clearly the next stage, this is the withdrawal agreement that we are now talking about. Then we are going to enter a phase of between 2 and 5 years, in my opinion, which will be how are we going to define the new relationship with the EU. So this saga, if you like, is not over. So far, it is not impacting our business. I think that the good news is that in the election manifestos, of course, the Labour Party and the Conservative Party infrastructure is mentioned as a very important factor that both parties want to invest in. So you could argue that will be helpful for us also going forward. I fully agree. The only reason that I'm still a bit hesitant is if this outcome is a hung parliament, then basically we start all over again. So that was the reason on the Brexit. Anybody on the phone, operator, can you ask one more time?
Ladies and gentlemen, for any additional questions, please press star 1. Star 1 for any additional questions. Go ahead, please. No questions coming in from the call, sir.
Nog iemand in de kamer?
Ja? Question on the offer.
Ja, sure.
If I read this, such a further decrease of Rechabot shareholding has become unrealistic. That's still a mile away from taking over the whole company. If you cannot buy it, there could be a bit of patience there, but it still does not indicate you're going to buy the whole lot.
Yeah, this is obviously for Rechabot to answer, but
they
were in the press conference this morning, and what Henry Holtermann stated is that he says he takes the view that I own 65% of the company, I have 100% of the responsibility. Because of all the governance, I'm a bit further away than where I'd like to be. Further selling down will be perceived as very negative and will be done at prices that I definitely not want to be a seller. He didn't want to be here because the original intention was sell down, become a significant minority shareholder. That has failed. That apparently resulted in internal discussions in the family. And their view was to make the bid. And we basically have taken a very simplistic view on that, because that is then for us a new reality. And with that new reality, we have followed this due process, which has resulted in a recommended offer. And that's it. And whether this is for them smart or not smart, time will tell. Anybody else? Nee?
No.
Operator, then we're going to wrap up. Thank you for joining us on the call, everybody. And we will publish our Q4 numbers before the bit of Rechabot will be done. So if it's down to me, we will have a meeting again in February to discuss the full year numbers. Thank you.